Okay, so it's great to see everybody, and tonight we'll have the third and final installation of the special series, evoking some of the Rav's Torah in conjunction with, you know, our preparation for Chag HaMatzos and for the Seder in particular. 2 weeks ago, we discussed the interaction between the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim and Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Last week, we discussed...
Excuse me, it says the host has stopped my video.
Oh.
No. You can't start your video. The host has
I'm asking you to start the video now. There you go.
Okay, sorry to interrupt. Okay.
No problem. Excellent. Okay. Looks like that's working. If anybody else is having a similar problem, let me know. I have a slight preference. I don't want to pressure anybody. I like to see people, but I don't want to pressure anybody. My official policy is one of neutrality. Swiss policy. Last week we discussed the balance between Lechem Oni, the idea of matzah as Shalani, Dargo Shalani Beprusa, and Matzah Shal Geula, and tried to argue that that balance is achieved in a very delicate way between the Haggadah itself and the matzah is kept whole, and the mitzvah of Achilas Matzah. So tonight what I'd like to try to focus on is a little bit of a story about the Karpas, what we call Karpas anyway. The Gemara doesn't use that term predominantly. The Gemara refers to the idea of tibul, the idea of dipping, and specifically the idea of dipping twice. We'll focus on the first instance. Let's start with a question in the spirit of this evening. Anybody know what reason the Gemara gives for the entire institution of karpas, what we call karpas, taking a liberty there, but what we call karpas? What's the rationale for it? It creates this whole fiasco. It's like, you know, people have to get up and wash. Okay. It's reasonable. That might explain the minhag that some people have to use specifically like a green vegetable. Anybody here have parsley? Is that anybody's family minhag? Okay, Naomi's, Eva's, right.
My husband.
There you go, okay. Mark Noller.
Yeah, we use parsley all the time.
Spoken for, Chaya Gopin Friedman. So that might be. You don't find much of that, really. The truth is, in the Mishnah or the Gemara, even the Rambam, talks about yerek, just something that you can make a bari pri adama. That seems to be like the common denominator with maror. I must have mentioned this at some point in the past, but my chavrusa for a couple of years in Shir and then in Smicha is now the Rosh Kolel in Skokie, Rabbi Noach Goldstein. So his grandfather, Rabbi Teitz, used to use a banana so that the grandkids would know that to make a bari pri adama on the ground, the banana. It seems like a good idea. It's a clever thing. So the Gemara actually gives a very interesting rationale. The Gemara says, hakeru l'tinokos, that it's a strange thing to do. So the children will start wondering what in the world is going on, you know, grabbing these strange dips, like, you know, I guess if you're an aristocrat, you have to think of something else to do for your kids because they're used to having fancy dips. But like, you know, if we started doing that at our meal, right, my kids would be, what's going on over here? We don't usually have hors d'oeuvres. So like, what is the meaning of this exactly? So assuming that that's the case, one would assume that there's a very high degree of flexibility regarding this practice, meaning the whole idea is to get their attention. So, you know, you could dip things in salt water. You could, maybe you could just kind of alter the practice entirely. Like, for example, another thing the Gemara says, actually on the same daf, the Kuf Tesvav in Psachim, is that the reason that we lift up the Okrinis HaShulchan, they used to have like these like miniature tables, like a symposium, like they would, you know, actually move tables in and out. And so was Gemara says, why do they remove that? And it's the same answer, so that the kids go, what? Like, the meal didn't start yet, they're removing the table? Like, what kind of meal is this? You know, we want our money back. And then you start saying, oh, you know, it really is different. This is a unique evening. So there, there's the Rambam writes explicitly that there's no like formalistic rule that you have to, when it comes to these kinds of practices, the Rambam says, chayotze b'dvarim ha'elu, that a person can, you know, do whatever it takes to get their kids, their grandkids' attention. So, you know, these things are like inherently sociological. You sort of have to know your crowd. So I have this, my mother's brother made Aliyah many, many, many years ago. His English name is Howie, but his English name is Nissan. So he got a kick out of it. Like, he made Aliyah like before the mass importation of Japanese cars to the United States. That's how long ago it was. And specifically the Nissan brand. So on one of his trips to visit my grandparents, Zichrona Livracha, in the airport, he saw somebody wearing a Nissan hat, like an actual, like the Nissan Automotive Company hat. And he thought this was like the greatest thing in the world. So, you know, like, because they don't have that in, you know, they have Subaru in Israel, but they don't have Nissan so much, or, and Hyundai. But so he got this, he picked up a Nissan hat in one of his trips. This is like 20 years ago. And he tells me that he wears it at his Seder every year for Israeli grandchildren who barely read English. But he wears a hat which says Nissan on it in English. So they start saying, you know, what in the world? What does that say? He says, Nissan. You know, Saba, there's a car company named after you in America? He's saying, well, not exactly. It's actually Japanese. But, you know, do whatever you want. Wear a funny hat. Wear, you know, so... It wouldn't seem to be very particular. And there's a lot of discretion. I mean, like I mentioned before, like, you know, people might use a banana, or like, you know, in my side of the family, we use potatoes because, you know, that's what they had. So, you know, I like that very much. Like, you know, we do that, and we have parsley now because, you know, equal opportunity home, you know, and that's fine, as long as you make a Bari Pri Adama. But the Rambam has a very strange position that the Rav noticed. So the Rambam said, and it drew, you know, first and foremost, an attack of the Balei HaTosfos and the Hagos Maimonios and the Maharam Rutenberg. So that the Rambam, like, willy-nilly, came up with this idea that karpas is very, very important, and everybody has to have the requisite amount. Everybody has to have a kezias. Not just the leader of the Seder. But everybody has to have a shiur, as if it's like, you know, like eating matzah or something, you know, where you have to have the requisite amount, and it's every single person. And the Rambam demands that, like, all of the formal mitzvos of Pesach, like matzah and maror, and again, as a minhag, but a universally recognized minhag, korech, the Rambam requires all four of those, so matzah, maror, korech, and karpas, he treats them exactly the same way in terms of requiring, you know, dipping in the official condiment of the evening, which is not salt water. Okay, the Balei HaTosfos was going to be upset about that, but what's the Rambam's official condiment of the evening, which is really a story in its own right? The charoses. So the Rambam, you know, so if you look on the side of the Rambam, particularly in Hagos Maimonios and many other commentaries, everybody is like flummoxed. Because the Gemara said, you're just doing this to get the kids' attention. Like, so why would it matter whether you have a kezias or you don't have a kezias? In fact, some of the Rishonim got very upset about that for admittedly technical reasons, but I thought it was actually a bad idea, that it was a detraction, because then, assuming that you have a requisite shiur, a kezias, you come into the territory of perhaps requiring a bracha achrona. And that can create, right, a break in the process of the meal. There's supposed to be one integrated meal, right? You make kaddish. You don't want to be making a bracha achrona in the middle. And some people are very, very careful about that. So the Balei Tosfos say, the Rambam isn't just like, you know, being highfalutin about this, but he's creating problems for us. You should really avoid that. And probably the most, you know, like fundamental question here is, where did the Rambam come up with this idea? Like I said, in the Gemara just makes it about like just grabbing your kid's attention. So how did it take on like seemingly, you know, completely outsized significance and become so formalized? Like, for example, the Rambam doesn't say that about anything else that the Gemara puts in that category, like chotfenes hamatzos. So there's a dispute between the Rambam and the Ravid what exactly that should mean, but it's some kind of an antecedent to our practice, like, you know, people having the kids steal the afikomen, or the parents steal the afikomen, or what, like there are different versions of that. But the whole point is to create, you know, like something that the kids should stay up for, and the kids will, you know, pay attention, and this evolved, you know, to, you know, they'll get a present, and, you know, which kid is going to miss out on that? You know, they're planning all year, what's my afikomen present going to be? So, you know, the Rambam, like I said, is totally flexible. And this one area, the Rambam, you know, insisted on it. And everybody has to do it, and it's exactly this amount, and you have to dip it in the charoses. And, you know, there's no real justification for that if you're looking at the Gemara. So the Rav felt, you know, without, you know, explicating this, the Rav felt that it was very, very clear that what the Rambam did was he formalized the halacha of Kadesha Yishalu HaTinokos, or Hakeru LaTinokos. That is to say, that in this one area, the Rambam said, okay, granted that the genesis of this practice, of this part of the Seder, is so that the children should ask, but given that that is the genesis of it, what happened was that the Rambam took that and formalized the halachic structure. So now, it's not just that the leader of the Seder should do something of that basic orientation of dipping something and, you know, in whatever kind, but it became a formal halacha. It's a din of achilas halayla, and, you know, the Rav basically described that that process happened for the Rambam, that the Rambam formalized the din of Kadesh Yishalu HaTinokos. So I'd like to try to pick up where the Rav left off. I agree with all of that, but I think it's still, as we would say, Omer Darsheni, like, you know, why that one area, and this, I'm like adding questions to the Manishtana here, but why this one area of all the other areas, of all of the things that we do at the Seder to try to trigger the curiosity of our children, so why did Karpas become the one that took on like the most formal of structures? A shiur, number one. Number two, that it applies to everybody at the Seder, as opposed to Akiras HaShulchan, which is only the Korei HaGadol Levado. We only do Akiras HaShulchan, or in theory, you don't have to do it anymore, but because it's no longer a heker, but in the days where you had these small tables, you would only do that in front of the leader, so it applies to everybody. And the third proof, again, is the din of charoses, that it matches the matz and maror in that way. So I'd like to make two suggestions, one of which is admittedly somewhat formalistic, and the other, I think, is maybe a little bit more ripe for deeper thought. So if you look carefully throughout the Gemara, and the Gemara again is very, 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 very intent, starting actually well before the Seder, the Gemara Pesachim and Koftes says that Rabbi Kiva on Erev Pesach became a candy man, that he would give out treats in those days, sort of like caramel and walnuts. Those were like the zowers of their generation, to kids, to have them, like, you know, like hyperglycemic. Now, again, I don't know in terms of the strategy if that would work out. Like, you would think that they'd like crash 3 hours later, but I guess, you know, if you give them enough, steady supply, so it says that Rabbi Kiva would, like, you know, take great efforts to keep these kids awake for the Seder. I have to say, this is a parenthetical comment, you know, this is really one of the areas where in Chutz La'aretz you have to be careful, because, you know, in Israel, you know, you're playing for one night. You can go all out, you know, and the kids will be bonkers the next day, but it's okay. They can go to sleep. When you're playing for two siddurim, it's a different thing entirely. I think this has changed it's that really Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golios. But, Rabbi Kiva, obviously, you know, in Bnei Brak was, so he sold out on Klaios Vegozim. And there, you know, the Rambam actually, you know, was very taken with that, and he was able to derive a principle on that, but a very flexible principle. He says that on that basis, there must be a mitzvah of Simcha D'Oraisa, that a person really has an obligation not only to be Misameach, his spouse, but actually his children as well. And believe it or not, the Rambam took this example from the Gemara, but he seems to have been somewhat flexible about it, like, you know, candy. But, you know, for the most part, that still works against the children of a certain age. You know, then they get a little older and they want electronics, and, you know, you can, you know, whatever, each family will have to decide. But candy still works, you know, up until a prayer, maybe single digits. So I'd like to suggest, and again, the Rambam has that by Akira Sashulchan, and there's a lot of chodfinis on matzos, but, it is possible to make a distinction and say that the Rambam put greater emphasis, formal emphasis, on karpas, because that's actually a din of achila. If you look at all the examples the Gemara gives, right, in terms of, you know, kadesh yishalu atinokos, kadesh yakiru atinokos, the different formulations of that, this is the only one that actually touches on eating. And it could be that the Rambam felt that anything that involved eating at Leil HaSeder should be formalized, and you have an automatic shear of kezias, and it applies to everybody, and you have to dip it into the charosis. I can't dismiss that as a possibility. So I would say that would be suggestion number one. I don't think it's mutually exclusive with what I'm about to say, but I think it is what I'm about to say. I'd like to put most emphasis on this approach. So to appreciate what I'm about to say, we have to take half a step back to part of what we discussed last week, which is why I wanted to do it in this order. So for us, the Seder goes Kadesh Orchatz, Karpas Yachatz. We noted that for the Rambam, that's not true. So for the Rambam, the Seder goes Kadesh Orchatz, what we would call Karpas, Magid. If you recall, Yachatz comes later in the context of Motzi Matzah. And we tried to explain that last week because the din of Lechamoni, of Darko Shalani Beprusa, we thought the Rambam held was a din in Achilas HaMatzah. And therefore, Yachatz has to be pushed back and the Matzah has to be left intact for the Mitzvah of Magid, for Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's what we tried to suggest. Whether or not one accepts that explanation, it's not debatable that Yachatz, for the Rambam, comes later. So that means that the immediate antecedent to Magid for the Rambam is Karpas. This is exactly what we do before we begin the mitzvah of Vigad to Levinecha Bayom HaOlimor, before we begin the mitzvah of speaking to our children, of attempting to transmit, you know, the Jewish story, essentially, from its inception, from the birth of our people, until the present day. So I'd like to suggest that of all of the elements, and there were many, and the Rambam is highly flexible about, you know, executing them, of all the things that we do, even starting on Erev Pesach, to try to involve our children, Karpas was like ground zero. Because this is the very moment before one begins the process of maggid, the actual mitzvah of telling your children. So if that's true, I think something remarkable, really remarkable, emerges. Which is that for the Rambam, Karpas took on like outsized significance. That was the moment when there was like a call to duty. And everybody at the Seder had to take note of the fact that in a very formal halachic sense, we are now beginning the process, Kadesha Yishalo Atinokos, and that became very formal halacha, where each person had to do it, each person had to have a kezias, you had to dip it into the charoses, because now is when the chips are down. And now is when we're going to be starting Magid, and now the total focus has to be on transmitting the relevant messages, which I'll talk about in a little bit, to our children. And so Karpas wasn't just any heker. It wasn't just anything that was done a little bit differently, but the Rambam really thought that the timing was everything. And setting up Magid required an outsized, formalized, specific, you know, process of Kadesh Yishalu HaTinokos to focus and intensify the commitment on the part of everybody present to really orient the entire evening and the central mitzvah of the evening, Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, around the children, you know, who are present. In that sense, the one time that Kadesh Yishalu HaTinokos becomes a formal halacha, not subject to, you know, the way this family does it, that family does it, but really one of the mitzvos halayla, it all has to do with the timing immediately before Magid. I think this phenomenon, if our observation is correct, is really a remarkable one. What the Rambam believed, of course, the Torah prescribes like matzah, right? The Torah says, Ba'erev tochel matzos. And the rabbis prescribed maror. Really, maror bizmanazeh is not required by the Torah because it's only required in conjunction with the Karban Pesach, al matzos semaror miyochluo. But the rabbis felt that as a zecher, to remember the role of maror, and maybe, you know, at least in part, because, you know, not having the Korban Pesach really introduces an aspect of bitterness in its own right, one of those two, or maybe the conjunction of those two, that there was a role for maror midrabanan, and those are achilos halayla, and then of course we have korech, you know, zecher lemikdash, and those are the formal practices, those are the formal achilos, afikomen we discussed last week. But for the Rambam, elevated to the status of a mitzvah salayla, I mean, treated as a mitzvah salayla, is the entire mentality, just the mentality of Kadesha Yishalu HaTinokos. That becomes a formalized mitzvah salayla. That's not just like an instruction or a modality, a consciousness that one is meant to have within Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, but it becomes a formal achila before you begin the process of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, that there's a new achilas halayla, kol echad ve'echad, kezayis, tibulo becharoses, that becomes elevated in its status. And, you know, this is, I think, a very dramatic halachic expression of what really the Seder is all about. I mentioned before the concept of transmission, and, you know, we've talked throughout this series, especially in week one, I try to tie everything together now about the role of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, in particular, the idea Lefidato Shelben Aviv Malamdo, that the strong emphasis throughout the Seder is on making an accurate, realistic assessment of how this child or these children who are in front of me, you know, need to learn what is possible, what is realistic to get across to them, and then really putting one's mind over the course of this evening to really get that message, or if there are a number of them, those messages across. It may seem, to quote my mother, you know, a word that I think I've only heard her say, a bit hokey, but I really think that it makes a great deal of sense, that people who are in a position of leading the Seder with young children, or not even young children, but children, whether they're parents or grandparents, as the case may be, should put some significant amount of thought, if they are having, if they're fortunate enough to have children or grandchildren at their Seder, to put some thought into what messages they want to convey to each one in particular. This is something that, you know, if you're like, you know, very agile, and you know, maybe people can think of exactly on the fly, but I wouldn't bet on it. And that's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is the fidato shelben aviv melamdo. It's all differentiated to the needs of the child, and that really became a chalos in its own right for Karpas in the Rambam kedei sheyishla tinokos. And I think that it really does require advanced preparation to think about where is a child developmentally, where is a child in terms of their understanding. And when we talk about the, you know, the basic principles of Keneged Arba Banim Dibra Torah, that's obviously meant to be like an archetype or a paradigm. But in each family, nuclear and extended, it obviously applies in a very real way. For example, if we know that a particular child is like a, you know, of a little bit more of a philosophical bent and will wonder about certain things, you know, I got a question and not long ago, like, can I take time, literally in this way, can I take time during the Seder if, you know, my child has, you know, philosophical questions about Yetzias Mitzrayim to explain them, to which I responded, can you take time? The mitzvah, right? You know, and even though in the Haggadah and the Mechilta it didn't say, you know, Chacham Rasha Tam Sheinu Yodei Lishol, right? It didn't say Hafilosaf. You know, the point is these are paradigms. That the mentality is one of Kadeshi Yishalu Atinokos, Kadeshi Akiru Atinokos. We don't try to suppress questions, and it's not like, you know, we have this sort of agenda, you know. It's like you go into a class, you have an agenda. It's like, these are my points, I have to cover my talking points. That doesn't inspire anybody, and that's not going to stick with the children. Obviously, you know, there is chatzos, so, you know, time management, like everything else, is an issue. But within reason, you know, like if you're going to, you don't need to have a 3-hour Shulchan Aruch, you know, that's an area where it could be. But to really make time for the children is a very, very, very important phenomenon. And I would, like I said, I would suggest advanced preparation as relevant, especially if you know who's going to be there, and you've met them before, and you know what's on their mind. And this is really the mitzvah of the Lila. And I want to just conclude with, I think, an idea which is straightforward, but maybe underappreciated. And that is the following. If we ask ourselves as adults, you know, why is it that Kedei Sheyishalu HaTinokos became so important? And for the Rambam, it became a chalos, like I said. It defined Karpas, it became transcendent, the mitzvah sachilas halayla. Why are we so keen on that? What's our investment in that? And I'd like to suggest that the following. It's a story that I assume maybe somebody here has heard, but I heard it in a very specific context. They had a professor in college who was an older gentleman. And he had come to the university as a graduate student while one of the sort of the luminaries of the physics department was a man, Jewish fellow, by the name of Isidor Rabi. Isidor Rabi was a pioneer in the field of optics and lasers, and he was recognized for his contributions to the field with the Nobel Prize. So think about the Nobel Prize is, you know, they fly you out to Scandinavia, and they give you, you know, a nice amount of money. And, you know, in Stockholm, you get to make a speech. So, yeah, people speak about all kinds of things. So Isidore Rabi, a good Jewish boy, you know, grown up, spoke about his mother. And he talked about memories of his early childhood, nothing to do with lasers or optics. His mother was not using lasers in the home. But she was very invested in his education, as a good Jewish mother would be. And she had this very profound insight that he shared. And he said, you know, yeah, you're probably wondering, you know, what does it take to win the Nobel Prize? Like, you know, like how does that happen? So I'd like to credit my mother. And then he shared the following story. So we've all had this experience one way or the other, probably on both sides is the truth of the coin, where, you know, we were kids and we came home from school. We have kids and they came home from school, come home from school. And you say something to the effect of, how was your day? Boring. What'd you learn today? Nothing. Different iterations of that. Was there anything interesting that happened today? Of course not. You know? And his mother, Robbie's mother, did not ask that question. So she said to Isidore and his siblings, what question did you ask today? And that was all she wanted to know. And then Isidore Rabi said, okay, so I figured I should start like thinking of a good question to ask, you know, so I'll have something to say to my mother. So it obviously still required, you know, a little bit of cooperation on his part, which is appreciated always, but it actually opened my eyes. I remember hearing it from, again, a man who was an advanced age senior professor at the time, years and years ago. It immediately clicked for me in this way. What Rabbi's mother understood, I think, is basically the insight that Chazal had. And I think what led the Rambam to formalize this halacha of Kadesh Yishalo Atinokos right before we start Magid. And that is that there is a critical recognition, and we have to be honest with ourselves, that what matters to people, what stays with people, what influences and impacts people, is not so much what we tell them. We hope that they listen. We hope that they internalize that. But what people really take ownership of, whether it's information, or here information, which is part of a worldview, and ultimately which we hope contributes very substantially to forming their identity, is when they have a sense of investment and ownership. Getting the kids to ask questions, really getting their attention, is another way of making sure that they're taking ownership. It means that to ask a question, to ask the right question, to ask a good question, is to already reveal a certain degree of investment. We all know that experience, whether we're telling a story or sharing an idea, and somebody asks just the right question, and we feel so good about it because it reflects this idea that they really invested, they were paying careful enough attention, they knew exactly what the point was. And the goal of making sure that it's not just a monologue, it's not just information that we're throwing at them, but that we have their investment, and this is something that they're going to take ownership of, is the critical insight of Rabbi's mother. Don't tell me what you learned in school today. You're not going to give me a chazar ashir on what you did for the last 8 hours. I accept that. But tell me, in what way did you take responsibility and ownership of your learning, what question did you ask? And that's the priority. And I have to say that to me, this is what they would call today profoundly progressive, in the sense of really, really being forward-thinking at the generational level. What that means, I believe, is the following, that the way that Chazal designed the Seder for us, obviously based on the way that they understood the Psukim, V'igat levincha ki yishalcha vincha malchar leimor, was that the mentality of the Seder is like this. I'm here today, but this child in front of me will one day be sitting in my seat. And I want them to care enough about this that they should pass it on to their children and their grandchildren. That's my goal. That's a very ambitious goal. V'odatam l'necho nevanecho. That's like a profoundly ambitious goal. I want them to be so invested in this that one day, be very direct, when I'm not here anymore, they'll be telling their children and their grandchildren about this. This is that important to me. And the only hope that I could possibly have is getting them to a place where this is like really significant to them. So, you know, parents can prepare the best lecture in the world, which they may internalize 10, 20, 50, 80% of it, who knows? Or you could approach it differently. You could go in a different direction. That's what Chazal wanted us to do, just take a different route entirely and start from there, start from that premise, Kadesh Yishalu Atinokos, that we're playing the long game here. And the long game is, I want them to be doing this like long after this year's Seder, and I want them to be transmitting these messages generationally. And for that, I really, really, really need their attention. And for that, I really, really need their buy-in. So I said, as I said before, I doubt that this is something that can be done particularly effectively just in that moment. You know, people have a lot to do in Pesach preparation. I'm not trying to make it more complicated, but I would just say that all of Bedikas Chametz is a Din D'Rabbanan. I'm not telling people to be Megel. I'm just telling you, once you do Bittul Chametz, you can't really violate any Yisurei D'Arais anymore. It'd be hard to do that. But V'gad Tzavincha is a mitzvah min HaTorah. And I do think it requires a little bit of thought and a little bit of effort and a little bit of energy to think about ways that of engaging each of our children. And I'll just say it one quarter of a step further, but I think this matters. And that each year, we don't approach the kids the same way, because she who was 7 last year is 8 this year, and her mind is developing, and she's thinking about different things. And this is an enormous investment of time and effort and making sure, you know, the child who was once, so to speak, a Tom, or even a Sheino Yodei Lishol, becomes an older, wiser child with different kinds of questions. And I think that this really is something that's profoundly important and that requires a lot of investment. And one can never predict the future, but what I would say is the following in conclusion of this series. I think that one of the things that leaves the biggest impact on young people in general, and children and grandchildren in particular, is when they recognize, maybe not in the moment, but certainly in the fullness of time, that educators, that parents, that grandparents put a very significant amount of effort into something. So maybe they wouldn't remember 30, 40, 50 years hence what the specific program was, but could you imagine, you know, a parent, a grandparent, you know, designed something special, you know, something, a mini lesson for each child who was present. They would remember that. And they would know that it mattered. It mattered very significantly. The parent, the grandparent. And that's something that I think, it is an investment of time, but I think it pays itself off, you know, many, 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 many times over. To begin where we, to conclude where we began, I really think that even 30 years after his passing, and 40 years, you know, after his departure from the public square, so to speak, one of the most important messages of the Rav that I think needs to continue to resonate for us is so apt for the Leil HaSeder. The idea in its own right of Igad to the Vincha and the primacy of education within the family and within the home. I know I've told this story many, many times in the past, and it's really worth repeating in this context because it gives an insight into a person. When the Rav had gastric cancer in the winter of 1959-1960 and underwent a very serious operation, which wasn't clear to him which way things were going to go, he told his family that he would stake his claim to Olam Haba should things, you know, not turn out, you know, in the right direction, on three things he achieved in his lifetime, one of which was that he learned with his children, in a very significant way. And I think that is a very basic idea, but in our day and age, and this isn't, God forbid, to point any fingers in any direction. Life is hard, is busy, is complicated. And when people are paying what they're paying in tuition, they kind of develop an expectation that, you know, they have a right to expect that all education will be taken care of, and they're already paying, you know, an arm and a leg. But I think that we really, at a communal level, to remember the Rav means to remember this critical lesson that the primary learning, as much as that's possible, Leil HaSeder is the apotheosis, but between parent and child, there's something really invaluable about that, grandparent and grandchild. That was his education. He started the series by recalling the fact that he never had a formal Jewish education. He learned with his father and he learned with his grandfather. All year round, and that was how he ran his house. And of course, you know, he involved himself very heavily in formal education in Boston and in New York, but it was never as a replacement for, as a substitute for the Vigata Levinicha, which of course, like I said, reaches its high watermark of the year, to be sure, on Leil HaSeder, but as we discussed, the context of Sipor and Zechira is meant to have resonance every single day. I think this is a critical point. I think there has been attrition on this front in multiple ways without, again, you know, pointing any fingers, God forbid. But I do think that this is less of a value. It's something that isn't spoken about nearly enough. But the value of davening next to one's mother or father, as the case may be, the value of studying, of learning, these are the formative experiences that I think really, really, really leave their mark. And if we want, and we all do, long after, you know, we've exited stage right, transmission, I think it's critically important to invest the time and energy in a differentiated way, l'fidaito shel ben aviv melamdo, to ensure that ideas that are important to us, commitments that are important to us, are transmitted. Obviously, there are no silver bullets and there are no guarantees, but I don't think that there's anything new, anything fancy about this. When we ask ourselves seriously what makes the biggest impact, it's time and it's effort and it's investment. And to the extent that you know, maybe the rest of the year has become, and I hope this is not always the case, but maybe it's not on the radar at the current moment. I hope it will be. But at least for Leil HaSeder, at least really to invest in that night. Kedei Sheyishalu HaTinokos becomes the mitzvah halayla, it becomes a formal achila. Take 5 minutes, think about each one of the kids or grandkids who's going to be there, what they're into, and make sure that they have something that's special for them to remember for them. Something different than last year because they're a different kid than they were last year. I think that goes a long way. And if I would be sure about anything, which is hard to be in this world, but I'd be sure about anything, that's the kind of thing that people remember 10, 20, 50 years down the road is when, you know, grandma or Safta or Bubby or Zadie or Saba or grandpa or dad or Abba or Ima or mom did that. People remember those things. And more often than not, then they want to do that also. Because it occurred to them that took time and that took thought. So with that, I just want to wish everybody, you know, Chag Kasher v'Sameach. The Rav's neshama should have an aliyah. All of the investments that he made in our community, you know, as much as things have changed, these are, like I said at the beginning, part of our Masorah as a community, and I think part of the Masorah more broadly. And if he stood for anything, it was Kedei Sheyishalu HaTinokos, the idea of transmission, investment in our own children and children in general, in transmission to the next generation. That was his credo, that Torah could and would thrive in any generation. You had to find the right medium, you had to find the right message to make it relevant to them. But then Torah is eternal, he believed that. He devoted his life to that. And so, in remembering him, you know, we should take renewed confidence in that proposition, that with the proper investment and the proper energy, that we'll, you know, see very, very positive results at large from, you know, in impressing on our children the importance of Torah, the eternity of Torah, and a commitment to carry forward the stories that mean so much to us. So that, good yantif to everybody. Oh, let me give the last words to Naomi.